Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com. Borders seem to be all over the news lately. You've got trade wars, Brexit, and of course, Trump's wall. This week on Meat and Three, we're exploring how borders are created and blurred in the world of food.
We try to focus a lot on the fact that they are chefs by nature, that the refugee thing is just a status for them.
And after the Soviet space ended, I don't think there was much research. It was all considered just Soviet food or Russian food. And I don't think it gives a lot of those cultures credit.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's meat plus sign THREE. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Good morning. Jeet killed it with the intro. I got the full thing.
You did that by yourself? You played all the instruments for that? That's impressive.
I feel newsy.
He even knew exactly which instruments were which. He was prepared. He had the whole thing ready.
It was masterful. These are the times where we wish we had a video camera inside here.
I wish we also had a video camera because I'm interrupting Brandon finishing his bracket for March Madness, which starts today.
I'm totally doing that. That's not a lie.
So I hear March Madness comes in like a line and goes out like a...
land?
I don't know. I lost you there. All right. Good morning. This is the main course OG. I am in studio here with Patrick Martins, Mike Edison, Brandon Hoy, and me, Emily Pearson. Our guest for the Weekly Grill this week is calling in from the Alameda Sun out on the West Coast.
A real journalist
who's up early for us.
Real print media journalism.
Do you have your press card in your hat even as you speak on the phone?
I can present something like that at any time, of course.
And your pig pie hat, or is it a fedora?
Mike, you're actually dating yourself. Like, the real journalist, people don't even know what that means anymore. It just means like they don't work for Fox.
My girlfriend left me and I'm dating myself.
Technically, I just use my business card. That gets me just about anywhere.
You know, it's amazing back in the day, though, how much a business card, how much authority it would really imbue upon a person. Hi, I'm Mike from, you know, Acme Trading Company. Oh, Mike, Acme Trading, very important. People were much more gullible the pre-internet.
Yeah, you're like, I just printed this morning. No, but that's awesome.
It's true. If you added a business card, you were in.
Well, we can't see Eric, but we will believe him that he is who he says he is. So, yes. Eric, we're a little New York biased around here. So if topics tend to skew a little New York, you know, forgive us. But
we are the center of the world.
Totally cool. All right. I grew up in New Jersey, actually.
Yay.
So you have a little bit of an understanding of New York, just a tiny bit.
Fantastic.
I love New Jersey.
Also, just so we're clear, New Jersey is actually the center of the world.
That's right. Home of Frank Sinatra and baseball.
Bruce Springsteen.
Mike Edison.
Subway sandwich.
Right. It's where the New York Giants actually play. I mean, we should. You know,
all right, we'll give you that.
And the New York Jets.
And I believe WrestleMania is going to be held in New Jersey this year.
All right, so our first topic here this week is, it's rare to have a new neighborhood pop up in New York, and yet Hudson Yards is here. Last week, I wasn't here, but I listened to the show. Mike said he was terrified and never wants to go there.
No, I'm not terrified. I'm not terrified.
Mike, do you still stand by that?
I'm not going there. My life will be well spent if I never step inside that place. There's no such thing as a new neighborhood. New neighborhoods don't just pop up. Neighborhoods take years to develop and cultivate.
Well, I think that's what you're talking about. This was a developed, cultivated calculated,
it's
planned.
It's bullshit. They might as well just dropped it in by helicopter, which is basically what they did. No, I'm never going there. Don't you guys? This is like one of those science fiction movies about the Cloud City and the rich people, starring Tom Cruise.
Although I would go to Cloud City. If you dropped Cloud City on and told me Tom Cruise was going to be there, I would be paying for my ticket right now.
But it doesn't end well. You know it doesn't end well.
Exactly why you go.
Brandon, I do want to get your opinion on this, because on one hand, you have this place in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Then you have a restaurant in Los Angeles that's in a more
neighborhood that
space.
Was completely dropped out of thin air.
Okay.
Literally, so like a giant helicopter flew over and dropped a neighborhood.
A neighborhood that was designed on a computer screen.
Probably. I mean, hey, Culver City, I believe before there was any of the, always there's been studios there. So there's been, you know, television and there's people that work in Culver City for many ages, but also a lot of used car dealerships, which I found very interesting, which is not that different than a pizza place. So for me, it was like kind of a no-brainer. Used cars, pizza, you know.
For me, the thing I respect about Hudson Yards is that it did not demolish. Well, it did not. It didn't uplift the train tracks and move them somewhere else. They were creative. They're running everything on top of the system that currently exists. And it was a dead zone of, look, Manhattan's a small place. Or there's not that much room for expansion. I think it was pretty brilliant. Well, I know it's catering to the 1%. I know it's all shiny and new and has an art installation that supposedly looks like shawarma. But I think it's cool.
You know, they've been trying
to
develop
an amusement
park
to take kids. I think that's what they sell it as. Your kids can run around like idiots in this safe place with tons of businesses and coffee and culture. It's like an amusement park for adults, I mean, is what they're basically trying to do, which isn't wrong. Now, New Yorkers like him, Hell's Kitchen people and all that, they're like, oh, it's Disney. That's what they accuse
it's
Giuliani of
doing.
It's just
a giant retail space.
But yeah. So is but Battery Park. So
people
is,
love malls.
I mean, so is everything around
I moved
Brookfield
here to get
place.
Away from them. I mean, that's another thing, too. It's like,
that's a good point.
You know, I go to a foreign city, wherever it is, whether it's Venice or Paris or Istanbul, the last thing I want to do is be confronted by, like, the Coach store, the house, you know, it's all the same luxury brands, the Chanel store, whatever it is that I get here, that I get at Fifth Avenue. Why would I spend money and time there when I'm, like, in Venice or Istanbul?
Mike's the asshole that's like, get off my lawn, and you're like, first of all, you haven't watered your lawn in 20 years. It's just a pile of dirt.
I don't have a fucking
lawn.
And
it looks like shit, and you haven't taken care of anything, and you're like, get off my lawn. It's so important to me.
I mean, it's shiny and new, whatever. We already have a Disney store. There's no there's no soul there, you know.
Eric, is there a shiny new neighborhood that you've watched grow recently?
Yeah, actually, we've got shiny new neighborhoods popping up all over because California has this major impetus to create more housing, and so every community has to contribute something. So even on our little island city of Alameda, just about every last square inch that isn't fully developed is like got a plan or is underway. So
which is unfortunate because Alameda is a very beautiful little city, like colorful little houses surrounded by water. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. I think it's like a little hidden treasure amongst the East Bay.
Well, you guys tried to do Jack London Square, right? Wasn't there like a tremendous effort and energy to make that space be
Yeah, there's talk of moving the A's stadium there, which would do a lot for it. But that's actually across the way in Oakland. That's a whole separate city. But it's, I don't know, just overall in California, I think there's a lot of growth. And you do see neighborhoods just pop up with brand new businesses. But to your point, in a lot of the cases, they're like chain businesses. They're not local, homegrown mom-and-pop shops. They're, you know, Subways and...
Well, let's talk about Hudson Yards.
And global luxury businesses.
You know Hudson Yards is more mom-and-pop, actually, right? Mama Fuco is independent, right? I mean...
Well,
it's a luxury brand.
But it's
point.
A luxury neighborhood.
There's a Neiman Marcus there, but it's...
Oh, yeah,
it's
mom-and-pop.
Well,
Mr.
they're
Neiman
also opening...
Marcus.
I mean, the long-term plan is also to have schools and to have hotels, and it's all new residential.
Right, so people can go there and never leave, live their whole lives there. Don't you see? This is just like more Big Brother. Like,
hey,
like,
can you look up to see what chains are at
the... I don't think there are any chains. I think they are targeting chefs and restaurateurs who maybe don't have outposts in New York City, like Jose Andres is opening. And so people who are...
I thought you were saying targeting, their, like when a group of developers is trying to get Target to come.
Oh, no, not that okay. kind of
You know, the only people who are going to benefit from Odds and Yards are the people who make Windex.
Because it's very shiny. Lots of glass. That's a true point. All right, the window washer man.
It'll be interesting to see if customers
never
go there.
Never going there.
Say it again, Mike.
I'm not going there. By the way, it hasn't been.
So you're
been,
not. You know what?
By the way,
when we have dinner at Momofuku, yeah, you're not invited.
You're going to go with the first offer of a free cocktail, Mike.
By the way, I haven't been to the new Yankee Stadium since they opened either. Because
since it left the Polo Grounds, Mike is like, never.
No, it's like
the Polo Grounds is the only place
where
the Yankees
should play. I don't think they're good for my city. I feel like I've, as a New York City taxpayer, have been held over a barrel to pay for this junk. The tax giveaways for Hudson Yards versus the Amazon deal that fell through. I mean, compare them. This is not good. Economics.
He won't go to Madison Square Garden. He'll only go to the original YMCA where the Knicks played their first season in 1908. All right.
Hey, we'll see how this shakes out, who it's good for.
Yeah, Eric.
Basically, Mike only goes to the Y.
I just want to get this point in there that the reason why they want you to spend your whole life in that neighborhood is so that you never have to drive anyplace. I think part of the idea of like new design in neighborhoods is to keep everybody out of their cars. They can just walk downstairs and go to the local shop or
which New York doesn't
do their job
from.
There.
Yeah,
which I do anyway.
Reduces commutes.
Yeah.
Listen, that's another topic, but I've been long for Manhattan being pedestrian only, commercial traffic only. At any rate, I think
one should be allowed to drive 30 miles an hour down Union Square.
Commercial traffic in Manhattan. I mean, the bridge and tunnel tolls should be like $4,000.
Exactly. You should be encouraged to park your car in New Jersey and take a nice ferry in, because a lot of those people are terrified to drive in New York, so they should be relieved.
We have amazing public transport here. We move a lot of people around. It could be a very green city very, very quickly.
And we have Uber. I mean, those are professional drivers.
This is only going to affect drug dealers. They're going to be super pissed. Now it's like, whose car do you wait in to buy your... Well, I guess you just like... Your weed just comes...
My guy comes on a bike, dude.
They're very sustainable as well.
Well, let's talk about consumer...
I was going to say, speaking of the American public and what we think of them... So,
highly or lowly? Let's see.
So this is a bit of a deviation. We read that Catskill Mountain Keepers was telling us that the pollinator population is crashing at an alarming rate due to pesticides, fungicides, loss of habitat. Speaking of, Hudson Yards being built, loss of habitat, and climate change. Do you all have faith in the American public's ability to react to this truth and to actually do something about it with their dollars, or do we just like to talk about issues?
I do not have faith.
Yeah, what is this, some sick sort of fucking joke?
Yeah, I'm going to say no. I think we all can agree that there's not a lot of faith here.
Let's see, in California, it's a different population. What do you think, Eric?
Well, I mean, I'm a total tree hugger, I guess you could say. But, I would like to do something about that. But in terms of, like, the American public and sort of, like, the general sense of things right now, I don't think anything's going to happen with protecting the environment, sadly.
Or purchasing, seventh generation dishwashing liquid.
Why is that stuff?
It's interesting. Basically, we have no faith in any of these things being fixed. They're only going to get worse.
Well, look,
interesting comment.
The government, the people who run the country, the corporations, the government, the people with the money, are ignoring global warming writ large, like in this cataclysmic sort of way whose effects are visible every day through weather, through tragedy and disaster, through, oh my God, California's going to fall off into the sea any second between, like,
I think the only way...
And you're going to tell me about bees now and people are really going to care?
The only way these things are ever, like, truly addressed are in some sort of marketing ploy to make money. So now you're like, well, I use less plastic in my packaging. You should buy my shitty Disney toy. So, I mean, really, the effect of it is just another like, bucket of schemes for people to market their crap.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, remove plastic straws like some socialist agenda, right?
I mean, like if you said if you buy one more thing of honey, they're going to all die. I think that honey would get bought up in a single second in a million stores around the country without even the faint, even though you knew the thing would go extinct. Like the trade of elephant tusks. You know, it doesn't slow it down. Even if there was one elephant left in the world in the wild, they'd
someone still wants it.
Well, it makes it more exotic. You know, it's scarcity makes it more valuable. And there is some sick fuck who fetishizes that.
That's the only thing I learned in economics. There was some guys protesting ivory trade by burning all the ivory, and the economist is like, he just made it more valuable because he lessened the amount of it that there was in the world.
Yeah, for sure.
The only thing I learned in economics.
So should we lessen the number of red tablecloth restaurants, or should we increase them?
Increase.
Patrick loves this particular topic. Eric, I don't know what your take is on it. Does the world need more red tablecloth restaurants?
Absolutely.
And what we here in New York call diners and coffee shops?
Where you don't need a menu. Yeah. You just pick what you want anywhere in the food world, and they will have it and cook it just how you want it. That's a chef to me.
I think we should just get rid of tablecloths just altogether.
I like the paper little placemats. They're much easier for cleanup.
Right.
The ones with games on them.
Yeah, Mike preferably when I'm given crayons.
He hates anyone who looks at a menu at a diner.
Seriously, you go to a diner, it's like you already don't know you're having the Western omelet. I feel that same
pressure when I'm with Patrick at a bar and I ask for a cocktail menu because he thinks that you should know what you want to drink.
If they come right away with the cocktail menu, if you've waited 15 minutes to finally get the guy and you're like, can I see the menu? At that point, you order dark and stormy, a Manhattan, a Negroni, or a martini.
Just, well, if the guy drops it off and says, here's our cocktail menu, and then disappears,
yeah,
that's like the worst.
Well, I say, hey, while you're here, I'm going to scan through these because I usually know what kind of alcohol I want in my drink anyway, so that's half the battle.
Brandon, have you ever thought of having a menuless pizza place where people can just, it's whatever they want?
Yeah.
No, it would be fucking chaos. I shit you not. That would be the worst place for me to run. At that point, I think it's over. I would quit. I'm like towards the other way. It's like, how could I get less things on the menu? Could I just like have a place that only serves like three things? That would be my ideal.
Well, the opposite.
But
is that,
hey, you know, to
pizza
each his
gives
own.
You a lot it. Of choice just by it. Itself. Well, we have a place in my old neighborhood where Emily currently lives called Marco Polo, and it's an 800-page menu. And the guy's like, it's you really want to look at it, or you just want to tell me what kind of day you had and what your favorite vegetable is, and they will make anything. It's a real luxury. Kenny shops.
Is it a real luxury though? Because I've been to Marco Polo. Yeah, the food is not a real luxury. It's not a real luxury. See, this is the price you pay, right? You're like, I could get anything at this place. Yes, you can. Any garbage you want because
covered
they can
in red
do,
sauce.
Like, how many things can you possibly make good?
I also think what that's called is you kind of just wish there was someone in your house who you could approach and be like,
just start cooking.
I would like to have this today.
Well, the way Kenny Shopson did it, he had 5,000 ingredients in his kitchen and 5,000 menu options, but he would all cap certain ones like lamb.
The
lamb
he needed to move before it went old.
Or yeah, it was already old, by the way.
All right, well.
If technology comes through for us, remember in Star Trek, The Next Generation, when he used to be able to just talk to that console and say, Earl Grey hot, and his tea would just show up there automatically? I mean, I think that's where we need to go. Maybe
there's
you guys
a new
need to
show.
Develop the technology to produce any food at any time.
I like you,
Have you guys seen the show The Orville? It's Seth MacFarlane's show. They have the same exact thing. And they have this whole name for the... I have to look it up. But there's a name for the console that they go to, and it basically makes you anything.
It's like in the Jetsons
It just recombines the molecules. But what about a restaurant where there's no menu, but the people don't get to order either? They just sit down and you just bring them dinner.
I mean, that exists too.
That already is a popular, you know, recent phenomenon. I mean, there's tasting menus everywhere. Blanca has no... Like, we have one right here, 25 feet away.
20 courses, you just sign on.
Yeah, you're just like, sit down and the food comes out. There's no options.
I like that. So speaking of, what would each of you like the dining out public to understand that they don't currently?
That's an excellent question that I wrote. No, what would you, dining, so much stuff. I would like the dining out public to not feel that they have to conform to the traditional restaurant concept, which Roberta's has gone on to kind of break down those walls. Like, I have to order the wine. I have to talk to the sommelier. I have to buy an appetizer. No, you could just buy 6 appetizers and get the hell out of there. No dessert. Also, you can give your credit card to the waiter before they even drop the check, which adds another 20 minutes. They'll be honest. You'll have
really,
an item.
You don't really want to sit at a restaurant, it sounds like. But you just want to eat what you are in the mood for and pay for it before the check even comes. And yes. Just... And in it's and out. 20,
people are like, oh, wait, I can't take my kids out to dinner because it takes 3 hours. I'm like, it could also take 40 minutes if you just order the second you sit down. So you can break the traditional rules of the French format.
I think 3 hours. I think I agree with you completely on this. And I think at its simplest form, you just like people just need to enjoy themselves. Going out is a release of everything else. If you want things to be your way, just stay home, cook yourself, find somebody who can do it for you. Going out, relax, have fun. Enjoy the environment that you're in. Uh-huh. Pick a restaurant that you like the food.
Don't be
you
uptight.
Like the people. Yeah. Just enjoy yourself. Why go out and be stressed out, or why go out and have such high expectations on what you're going to get that like everything is... falls below the standard for you.
Exactly.
Just enjoy yourself.
And by the way, and this is also a thing that I got shot down for this last week, but I'll stand by because someone else independently told it to me. Don't worry so much about the money, because no matter where you go, you're going to spend $75 or $50 a person.
I mean, it just happens to you at McDonald's.
And at Junior's.
That was our conversation.
Junior's is
Patrick told
really
me that every
expensive.
Restaurant, you basically pay the same amount, whether it's highbrow or lowbrow.
Within $20 a person, $10 a person. So if you're really money there, if not, it's just the difference of $20, even a high cocktail versus a medium cocktail, still it's a $3 difference, you know.
Well, those are the rules. I mean, first of all, the customer is not always right, and the customer needs to understand this. If you go to a restaurant that you like and that you trust, you should put put the control in the hands of the restaurant. What do you think would be the best experience for me? Let them create the experience for me. A lot of people come to the restaurant thinking they're going to control it.
I actually disagree. I mean, I say enjoy yourself. If you want all apps, order all apps.
Sure.
Them. You don't have to order a 28
But no one knows
fish.
The restaurant better, hopefully, if there's some enlightened service and people have their shit together, that the person who's serving you, you can ask them, this is what I like, what do you recommend?
And just leave yourself in their hands.
You know, and leave yourself in their hands and ask them about the wine and not be like, you know, I want the ribeye medium rare with the Bordeaux, and that's it, because it's all you've eaten your whole life. It's all you know.
You know, there's a phrase in operations, they say know when to fire your customer.
That's
which
right.
Which is like a really true thing.
Fire their menu or?
Know when to fire your customer. Sometimes the customer, like sometimes you have a customer that stays with you so long that they either haven't followed your transition or evolved with you that like sometimes it's just better to just part ways. It's like a bad relationship.
Yeah.
If you just stay with a person because you've been with them, it may suck for you. Yes. And the same thing could happen to a regular customer at your restaurant. You may have grown apart, and it might just be time that you call
it quit. Is that the disclaimer you give
at
the door now when everybody walks in?
Not really. And I can't say that I completely abide by this, but I just think there's moments where you have to look at everything and say, is this the best thing for me? Is this the best thing for them?
I mean, I was saying this to Emily about my kids. You know, I say something to my kids that I feel fewer and fewer parents say is, because I said so. That's it. Let's end it. It's not all the time a good policy to say
that. I'm okay with that.
And likewise, when you're at a restaurant, you're like, oh, I was totally unprepared for the wine list. Oh, what do you want? Do you want, right? Like, someone has to just say, let's order a rosé. I want a rosé. Just go with it. Because I said so. That's and you have to... I feel my heart sinks when people, a special occasion, they go out, they spend $300 for like someone's graduation and they're uncomfortable and uptight and they feel something's wrong and they have an unfair time and they're like, we don't like going out anymore. And you're I wish you had done what you thought.
Also, I think those are people who don't truly like to be the host that's in charge. They'd rather be at someone else's event, or they'd rather say, like, I'm organizing this, or I'm picking up the bill, but you make all the decisions because I don't enjoy a relaxing meal if I'm the one in the driver's seat.
Or they don't fully understand, like, the restaurant-customer relationship.
Yeah.
Which is important, you know? And bring some fucking money when you go to a restaurant. Don't think that you're going to order around the edges of the menu and get away with a bargain. If you go to a high-priced restaurant, I mean, you know, if you go into like a 4-star restaurant or a white tablecloth restaurant, be ready to drop some fucking coin, because that's what it exists for. That is the only reason it exists, is to separate you from your money. Hopefully, at the end of the day, hopefully that's why it exists. But hopefully at the end of the day, when you get your Amex card. When you get the bill,
you'll remember the event.
I like this line of mine.
You say, that's right. You say, hey, that was really okay. Let's do it again. Not like I got skull fucked.
Hey, it's like New Year's Eve. The best New Year's Eve you probably ever had just happened to you randomly, right? Yeah. It's like when you have all these expectations, you spend the whole day getting ready. You're like, I'm going to this party, and then I'm going to this party, and then I'm going to this party. It always sucks.
You wake up
because your expectations are out of fucking whack.
That's why I never dress up or put any energy into anything, because that way I'm
generally
in life.
Like, I agree. Just like have very low expectations in life, and you know things will surprise you.
No, but going out, yeah.
You know, I think there's like whole cultures that look at it differently than we do. Of course, Italy is a good example for culinary type things. My understanding is that when you go over there, you kind of just let the chef decide what is the best thing today, and they serve you what you it's know. Like that, what that's kind of like how to have the best experience.
No, it's true. It's true. Well, let's jump to another topic. So much to talk about. It is interesting to have a restaurateur, someone who's on a furloughed, to be polite, Emily and myself. So we read that the National Pork Board is embracing blockchain technology. The Assistant Vice President of Sustainability at the National Pork Board said, this is what he said.
This is sexy. The Pork Board's embracing blockchain.
Wait for this line. It's a
this
little...
National Pork Board said, we look forward... Basically, he said, we look forward to working with blockchain so that we can increase performance and so that people can be confident about our critical control points.
Okay, I have no idea what this means.
The whole point was that he used the word about increasing transparency. I don't feel that the National Pork Board, that is sort of the umbrella over 120 million pigs that are killed per year, really wants transparency.
Yeah, they're all of a sudden like, oh, this cutting-edge technology is really going to help us communicate what we do after we've like removed every camera from every slaughterhouse. We've fired people. You have to wear hazmat suits. No one's allowed. You can't take photos of our farms from the outside. So blockchain is great. We love, thank God blockchain came. I'm like, you bums, you're trying to avoid, you're going to use this, like you said, that bucket. It's just a new bucket of technology.
A marketing ploy. Yep.
So they're going to use the most traceable of technologies.
Basically, the statement just had all nice fluffy words in it. The only one that stood out to me was the fact that they went out of their way to use transparency.
Yeah, they want transparency. What are you talking about? Every article ever written about you for the past 30 years is how you've been arresting people who even come within 100 miles of your farm. And now blockchain allows them a marketing ploy without obviously having to change anything, just to demonstrate. Are they going to show like a close-up of a thermometer that shows it's not too hot and not too cold, but no other shot of the whole farm, you know? All right, no one cares about this question.
All right. Yeah, thank you on that.
It's just upsetting to see them co-opt something. I mean, the Meat Hook is talking about showing how their cow really is amazing through blockchain technology. That's awesome. Good job, guys. The National Pork Board is robbing that technology for what
I mean,
it was
you nailed you nailed it on the head with the, again, this is just another marketing scheme. It's just a way to like say you're doing something without actually having to do it. And that's all people want. They just want you to say
I do think that is what we want a little. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
We like to hear nice things. Yeah. It's like we hope that people are going to save the pollinators by putting their dollars in the right place.
Like, print a little bee on your something or whatnot and be like, we're trying to save the bees. It's like, are you really trying to save the bees? They're like, nah, not really. But
it's awesome tote bag.
But I sold a shitload of these tote bags.
And technology has, revolutionized every industry, so why should the pork industry be any different, right? They need to be jumping on the bandwagon, too. Mm-hmm.
No, absolutely. So, I don't know if you heard, Eric, but Mark Bittman just announced that he's coming out with a new food magazine. It's not actually a magazine, though. It's an online-only publication. So, as the publisher of the Alameda Sun, why aren't more people launching new print publications?
Well, I think it's just simply the prevailing trend around the world is that print media doesn't have much of a future, and that may be why people are not, launching more print publications. But in general, the people who have been doing print are still doing it and still having some level of success with it. Print book industry is still very much alive, and there's still millions of newspapers printed around the world that are at varying degrees of profitability, maybe not as much as they used to be, but people still make their livelihoods off them. But anyway, I mean, I give this guy a lot of credit for starting something new, even if it is online only. The only question is, how's he going to pay for it? Are there ads in the publication that pay for it? Do people subscribe to it? The real question is, when you're going to move a publication online, is that old saying, how do you monetize it? That's kind of been the trick.
Well, let me just say this. Okay, bullshit. Okay, if it's a magazine and it's online, it's not a magazine, it's a website. Okay, okay. I mean, let's call it what it is.
Or a blog. Okay?
Is it a blog?
You can call a pie cake all day long, it doesn't make it so. All right, okay, all right. It's a website. And listen, a lot of people are making money in print. See, there's this sort of prevailing thought that print is dead because of the internet. And of course, people aren't selling magazines the way they used to, and especially these, you know, juggernauts like Condé Nast and Hearst and these large companies that can't afford to run magazines the way they used to. But these are people that have their own buildings. They have like 700 people on staff. They have CEOs that make millions and millions of dollars. It's an old model. I'm sure a local newspaper can make money with this much smaller model, you know.
But it's the same type of model?
Well, yeah, but it's just much smaller. I mean, you know, not everybody there is driving Lamborghinis.
Well, we have
it's
a specialist here with
unless,
Eric.
Unless you
so,
are.
I mean, he can tell us how
Eric,
how
you are
run.
You driving a Lamborghini?
Well, no, I'm not. But I am driving a relatively new cruise that I'm still trying to pay off. But the thing is, I don't know. If
websites are hard to monetize because, first of all, as you know, I mean, if you do find an audience, advertisers love print. They'll pay more for it because they find it more sticky. More people spend more time with print advertising than they do with banner advertising. It's very hard to value and therefore monetize web advertising. It's very
right.
ephemeral.
Right. It's not that I clicked on it accidentally and that meant something to me.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. You start building booby
traps. I click on things
chat.
Accidentally.
Well, you
all
start.
The time.
That's how you monetize. But that's how you monetize the internet. You start booby trapping this place, and it's all bullshit clickbait. And you're selling. You're just selling these. You're kind of selling nonsense, to be honest with you.
Well,
and
Mike
I think that's
is
what
always,
people are dislike about. You yeah, know, looking true. Through stuff on the internet.
Well, listen, Mike has always been print. He writes books. He was the editor of High Times. He wrote wrestling magazines. Magazines that were printed, you know, out of some high-tech Xerox machine and placed
involved
on
online publications as well. But there's something to be said for print technology, print the print experience. So I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with a website. The guy wants to start a website, good. Go
but it's not as impressive.
But don't tell me it's a
level.
Magazine because it's not a fucking magazine.
Why is it not as impressive? I'm always interested in that because a magazine or a newspaper is a physical object.
Yes,
it's
yes,
more
because it
impressive.
Is
exactly.
tactile.
Because it gets delivered to your door, and someone's paid to double park his car, and he
yeah,
comes
the
up there.
It's also very magical
well,
that it just appears
that
at your door.
No, no, I want my milkman.
I'll tell you what, Eric. I consider print magazines. Affordable luxury items, highly affordable luxury items. They're tactile, they're durable.
They're usually built with some sort of craftsmanship.
You know, there's something else going on there where you can hold it, you can leave it on the table next to the bong. But, you know, four or five people will see it. You know, you can pass it around. There is always.
It sits on your dinner table.
There's the, hey, Patrick, have you seen this?
And the Amy Schumer piece.
Well, how about then you get phenomenon. To use it as a fire, you know, fire kindling after you crumple up your newspaper. It has a
experience is so much different than the website experience. And I know we get our information in all sorts of different ways. I read the New York Times online. It's been a long time, honestly, since I bought a copy of the New York Times.
I just recently resubscribed. I'm getting The Weekender.
It's
and
so
I look,
nice.
I
enjoy
look forward
it when I do.
To it arriving. But, you know, it was funny. I wanted Patrick to see this article about Amy Schumer in the Arts and Leisure section, so I took a picture of it. But then I realized I probably should have just sent him the link so he could actually, like, read it. So knowing Patrick, he probably zoomed in on the picture.
I worked with Carlo Petrini, and I said, hey, Carlo, he wanted me to show him the budget. So, of course, I under-exaggerated everything and, you know, to show how cheap it would be to start a U.S. office for slow food. And then he was like, the newsletter, you only have a printed newsletter, like mailings, 10,000. He's like, make that 100,000 because how will you start a movement and communicate anything without something tactile? And it's true, a website. You might not finish the whole article, or you'll scroll, or you'll be lured into something else. The print thing thing sits and you, it's an
ESPN.
And
the photos, the way it's represented, and it's ink on paper. And no one wants to read anything that's more than 600 words online. But, you know, hopefully, I mean, it's very difficult to read long form journalism online. You know, I think you should start a new slow food magazine.
I would love to have a magazine. I started The Snail. It was terrible.
You know, but I think we should restart it. I think we should reboot it.
Why was it terrible?
It was terrible. I tried to read it one time. It was not good.
No, it was just an accumulation of stories. It had no, you know, thread to it. But it was cool, all the stories.
But a lot like the show.
A lot like the show.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, right now, you know, with all the people that are in your network from the years of doing business and the goodwill you've created, maybe it's time to reboot the
Snail. Were you going to start a magazine recently?
I think about it all the time. And I do think there's money to be made in magazines. You know, the thing is, it used to be you needed to sell 1 million magazines to make money and sell advertising. Now, if you could sell 100,000 magazines, but to a very specific audience, Eric understands that if it's very focused and you're bringing your message to a very good audience for your advertisers, you're going to make money.
Which just in the end means that you're better at your craft. So ultimately, you know who you're selling this thing to. You know what they want. And like,
I want to talk more about this after the break. I want to talk more with Eric about print. Mm-hmm. We're going to just take a quick break and stick around. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Today's program was brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. Roth is in its 25th year of making specialty cheese in the rolling hills of southern Wisconsin. With strong Swiss heritage, Roth is best known for its award-winning Alpine-style cheeses under the name Grand Cru. Fresh Wisconsin milk, combined with expertise in affinage, is how Roth creates high-quality, great-tasting cheese year after year. In 2016, hard work paid off when out of over 2,000 contenders, Roth Grand Cru Serchois was named world champion at the World Cheese Championship. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Andrew Friedman, and I'm the host of Andrew Talks to Chefs here on HRN. Every week, I interview a diverse cross-section of the best and biggest names in professional cooking. Give a listen and get to know all about the inner lives of chefs. You can find Andrew Talks to Chefs wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, welcome back. I requested a little bit of throwback to our Rocket 88 song. I've been missing it in the intro. I've been missing it, so I asked Jeet if he would put it on as our
We actually went to Sun Studios. We saw it.
Patrick and I were there last week. We did a visit to, we flew into Memphis, and we went to visit David Newman and his family at Newman Farm, who raises our Berkshire pigs. And then we did a little barbecue in Sun Studios while we were in Memphis. Anyway, we are back broadcasting live on Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
This just is had the main a lovely thing just drop in, all these oils.
I know. We have a little surprise visitor who just walked in during the break. We have Uli Sitter of Uli's Oil Mill. She was our guest a couple weeks back, and we were anxiously awaiting a oil delivery.
I'll tell you what's going to happen here. I'm going to rub that all over Mike's bot. Mike's going to take his shirt off. Why there should be cameras here. Mike's going to take his shirt off, and I'm going to rub oil all over
Do
him.
I just put this in my mouth? Do I just taste this?
You either put it on your skin, or you eat it. Drizzle it over your steak.
That's what I meant. Yes. Okay, but I can go like this right now?
Yes, yes.
Or will I get sick?
Yes. No, I don't. I hope not.
Which one is Patrick tasting?
This is the hemp seed oil.
Ooh. Okay.
Which you first tasted San Francisco, I guess. Peanut tea. At the Good Food Awards. Is it peanutty? Grassy? Yes.
Grassy.
Yes.
Earthy.
Yes.
May I?
All right. I would like to rub a little on my hand.
No, you can taste it.
I would like to see both sides of the spectrum.
Yes, and instead, I don't use any, you know, creams. It's just the purest oils I like.
This Eric, is a what do you good think? Food. I mean, Eric, I'm sorry that you can't taste this right
what
now.
What do you think about these oils?
I'm just kind of glad I'm not there to see that get rubbed all over Mike and Brandon or whatever.
Can you comment on the packaging, Eric?
Not exactly. Well, I can Google it. Let me see.
This is Uli's Oil Mill.
Also, Eric, I'm pretty sure you're missing out on what's happening in here with Mike and I. It's real.
Yeah, we're running amok.
Rubbing up against each other.
Did anyone else try it on their skin?
Ooh. Wow, these oils taste so different.
Brandon, did you try it on your hands? It's very lovely.
I just tasted that one.
This is wraps, yes. So all right. So
see, this is the worst part of radio
This is the worst part of radio.
Like, nobody's talking. Everyone's just like
this
lathering themselves.
This is where we should be like the Today Show live demo where we go through the line of everything.
That's very nice.
Well, it's a very sort of understated packaging with kind of stone background and apparently comes in three different flavors. Pumpkin seed oil, chili oil, wraps oil. At least that's what I'm looking at.
Yeah. Fantastic. I think you nailed it.
Well, you're here.
Eric, you're a master. I think you should be on this show pretty much as often as possible.
Have you considered,
maybe at least more often than me.
Have you considered a career in journalism?
Thank you. Uli's Oil Mill Organic Chili Oil is based
that's
on
the one we're tasting right now.
Oil.
That was a great read, and I feel like you have a lot of experience here, because that's probably the best read I've ever heard on this radio show.
Everyone loves Eric. He needs his own show here.
Whoa, that's a long finish, that relationship.
Uli, what do you have there?
I did bring the hemp oil, which you just tried, I guess, on your skin and in your mouth. And then I have the wraps oil.
Okay.
Brandon takes that spice.
It's delicious on... you know, your salad, but also instead of cream in your mashed potatoes, or I love it on fish before I put it in the oven. Perfect on your skin. Then I did bring the chili sunflower.
That is not for your skin. I hope not.
That's very spicy. It's got a long finish on that. Boy, oh boy.
Brandon, can I try that one?
That's good. You put that on pizza.
I'm not putting this one on my skin. I think it would burn. It's like when you touch pepperoncino and then like you rub your eyes by accident.
Yeah, don't put it in your eyes.
I would put it on your pizza and then put the pizza on your skin.
See, males have a different problem with peppers.
Yes, I know what you're about to say.
I know. It's rough. You just forget. You don't even think about it. It's a long day. A lot of Googling.
So this is mouth or skin?
This is spicy.
And this is a 4,000-year-old plant from Celtic Europe.
4,000. It tastes to me, I don't have a great palate, but it tastes to me more like 3,500 years.
And what do you attribute the bad palate to? Is there like something that
Tabasco sauce flattened everything? I went through years where I had the big jug in my house. I would drink it for my morning drink, a coffee cup full of Tabasco sauce.
Ooh, the pepperoncino one really lingers. What is that one there?
This is the camelina.
Okay,
and it's pea flower like.
4,000-year-old plant.
Yes, and biodiversity it attracts 80 different bee varieties.
Pollinators, it's helping to increase the pollinator population.
Selling a lot of tote bags.
Oh, nice. Hey, Uli, where do you get your olive oil from?
It's not olive oil. These are seed oils.
It's grown here. It says extra virgin on the label, so I figured it was olive oil.
Eric, your potential new show just got canceled.
Shucks.
So, you know, olive trees cannot grow in this climate, but these seeds can be incorporated into a mixed crop grain cultivation. And this is from Ancromdale in Hudson Valley. I taught my fantastic farmer how to grow that camelina in mixed crop cultivation, suppressing weeds, and minimum input, maximum output, plus fantastic for your bees and for your biodiversity.
Did you say that this one was pea?
No, it's camelina sativa. For me, it's a pea flower taste.
Yeah, no,
I love it on fish, but also on my morning cereal. And also on your skin.
I'm putting everything on my skin.
So does this increase life? This increases skin moisture, so it slows aging, and it also helps you live longer. I mean, would you say that about seed oil?
Well, seed oil.
Or is that outrageous?
I would say don't eat the supplements. Just eat what is grown here locally. Also empower farmers, empower small businesses.
But true health, like why would...
This is omega-3, plant-based, grown here.
So it... So, slows down aging, live longer,
it makes your skin nicer at the same time. And
because it'd be hard to get people into this without there being a single like this is what it does for is the one thing it does?
What it does. So just eat simple with two free ingredients. Drizzle these oils on top as a finishing oil.
That for what purpose?
A healthier, longer life.
Eating healthier.
Doesn't it taste good?
Don't eat all that fried food.
So
you
it's
know?
A substitute for bad food, but it doesn't particularly have any health benefits, is what I'm hearing.
Well, of course it has. It has many. It has, you know, the, is this the raps oil?
Uh-huh. Ooh, chili.
No, this is the chili you're drinking. Okay. Oh my
God. Patrick just took a gulp.
No, I'm just interested. When people are like, why should I do cedar oil? I'm like, oh, because of this and this.
Because of this and this. Well, there are many, many studies behind that. But I don't want to just claim any health benefits. So you need to have the complete analysis. So this is with hemp press cake. It has 28% protein. Then it has very high fiber. Uh-huh. The oil has, you know, omega-3.
Okay.
It's a complex study.
So it actually gives you a lot of your daily nutrients.
That's what you're saying. Instead of supplements, you have to have these single, simple ingredients. These oils benefit both your skin and the your whole body.
I don't take supplements. Okay, yeah, no, that makes sense.
I mean, so, but maybe you've needed some supplements. Maybe this can be your natural supplements.
Yeah, right. I mean, maybe now it's seed oil. I only do seed oil. That's why I don't need supplements, because I do seed oil.
Are you going to make any of them into creams, or you just suggest that people buy the oil and use that directly?
I, at the moment, you know, it's so complex. I also started with the protein fibers. This is the press cake stone milled. And I also started with, you know, this is not my packaging, but you also, with the press cake, you add some salt and it's a meat scrub. I don't know if you want to try that.
Please.
So it's so complex, it's, but sorry, sooner or later.
A meat scrub?
Yes.
Meaning like a rub for marinating your food?
So completely upcycling it, and sooner or later I might make a cream, but I actually like the oil on your face.
Yeah.
So now if Brandon were to oil Mike, like a full body oil, which oil would you recommend for a guy like Mike?
Chili oil, for sure.
Okay.
Chili oil?
That's going to be a lot of Googling later.
Does anyone take a bath with these oils, like fill up a bathtub if they were wealthy?
Well, I would say the raps oil, if you put a few drops into it, it's very nourishing for your skin. And the hemp is more for problematic skin, but also, you know, really brightens it, I would say.
Okay. All right. I would like brighter, smoother skin. Hemp oil?
It calms it down. Yeah.
Yeah, you have very smooth skin. It's like an air hockey table.
Oh,
it's
thank completely you. Smooth. Thank you, it's thank like you. Maximum viscosity. I could use a little more brightness.
Well, I did bring samples for all of you, so you can all play around.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It's really great. What a great visit.
I've been waiting for these samples.
How do people buy this? Let's do a plug. What's the website?
UllisOilMill.com.
ULLI.
S.
Apostrophe S?
No
apostrophes on websites.
Okay.
First time on the internet.
All together.
It's UllisOilMill.com.
Ulli sounds oily. It's good. It's a perfect name for this business.
Well, my name is Ulrike, but some Americans come up with Ulrike, which is a little unpleasant to my ear. Huh. So I went back to my childhood nickname, Uli. Yes.
Well, it's like what was the top hatchery of the 19th century in America? The Bird Brothers. They had the perfect name for it, and they took off. So Uli's oil, it's going to take off.
I like it.
If it hasn't already.
I like it. Well, Uli, thanks for being a little surprise here. It was so much fun to taste everything. We're going to maybe go do a little bit of cooking with some of it. And Eric, thank you for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That's right. Print is alive. Believe it. Okay? A magazine online is a website.
Remember, you heard that here. All right. Stick around for Tech Bites, which is up next at 11, and we'll be back next week with special guests Chris Fisher and Antonio Mora.
Oh, yeah. Very cool.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.